Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
The Asian Avengers, so weak.
The Asian Avengers, so weak, so fuckable, bro, you know? Whoa, there's five Asian guys together?
Together. Did you ever go through a stealing phase?
Do I think everyone should have a gun? Maybe.
Or you can look me up, I don't care, I'll fight you, I don't care.
You want to get high as fuck? You like opium?
Welcome back to another episode of Asian Not Asian Podcast, the podcast where two Asian guys not from Asia talk about American issues no American cares about. I'm your host, Fumi Abe.
And this is Mike Nguyen.
We're coming at you live August 8th, 2020 from Brooklyn, New York. If you're listening to this on your phones right now, please take a screenshot, post it on Instagram stories, tag us at Asian Not Asian Pod, and tell your friends to listen to us, okay? This is how we grow, and as always, if you like the show, please donate to our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/AsianNotAsianPod for bonus episodes and to get a shout out on the show. And if you're iTunes listeners, please leave a review. We love it. We love hearing from you on there.
Yeah.
A lot of things on my mind right now that I want to get to. And you know, this is something. You know, this is a callback to episode one, really. Episode one for the old school anals. I had that issue about my rice cooker. How my girlfriend wouldn't let me keep my rice cooker on the kitchen, and I was having an existential crisis because that's where it belongs,
I would too.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, there are all these little things that happen to you when you're in an interracial relationship. It's actually kind of hilarious. But here's what happened to me. Okay, so my sister, who is also Japanese, because that's how genetics work. She was visiting. She got married to this Brazilian guy, and they had this whole honeymoon plan, but it got canceled because of COVID. So now they're just doing like a road trip, and they're going to like some of the states with like a lot of nature and camping grounds and stuff like that.
So they went
to Maine, had a great time. On their way back, they live in DC, so on their way back, they swung by New York, and they wanted to hang out with us. So my girlfriend suggested that we do lunch. She's like, "I want to cook for you." I'm like, "Great. What can go wrong? Boy, was I wrong." Okay, here's what happened. So she was like, "I want to cook for you." Okay, and I need to tell the story in a way that I'm not going to get canceled. And I'm not talking about getting canceled by Twitter. I'm talking about getting canceled by my girlfriend. Okay, so I'm gonna just, as a prerequisite, going to say she's very nice and great cook. She's a good cook. Her food is good.
Yep.
It's not about that, okay?
Yep.
So this is a situation I've never been in this before because my girlfriend has met my parents and my family, but she's never cooked for them. And
oh shit, okay,
right. So like I didn't really think of it was a big deal, but I was like, "What are you making?" And she's like, "Well, he told me, my sister," she's like, "she said she wanted Mediterranean food." And I was like, that there's no way she said that. That's, you made that up. There's no way that I can imagine anyone related to me walking around being like, "You know what I want to have for lunch today? Baklava." That's
really?
There's no way.
She doesn't like Mediterranean food? Huh.
I mean, it's fine, but like I've never had a craving for it in my life. I don't know. Isn't it like Greek salads and shit? I don't fucking know. Like, anyways, so I was like, that's already weird, but that's fine. And I was like watching her like cook stuff for this event, and I quickly realized that every time I had like of lunch or dinner with her family is Bulgarian, so they eat a lot of Mediterranean food over there because it's close to Greek.
Interesting.
Every time I've had food over there, it's very good, but it's like they just eat very different things over there, you know. It's a lot of dips, right? Like
a lot of dips.
A lot of dips and crackers and bread, like you just they're like little mini sandwiches, but there's like sometimes there's no protein. Like you're just eating like a pickled eggplant or like a
like a
smashed tomato.
Beans.
Yeah. Yes. Again, very tasty.
Sure.
But
it's
you know, we're We're dealing with a Japanese person and a Brazilian person, right? These are arguably, you know, the people with the top the top talents in the world. Okay, they're used to the flavors, they're used to the spices, they're used to a lot of dashi. Okay, you know what I'm saying? So
dashi.
You know, so your food has to have soul. You understand? Like we need to put soul in the food, or they're not gonna like it.
So she's
preparing all this stuff, and it looks very pretty. Again, Mediterranean food is very pretty, but it's just like bread and dips, and I'm like, You cannot serve this to my family. Okay, it's good, but like this cannot be it. So I had to add stuff to the menu. I was like, can we at least have like some sort of like meat option, like chicken or something that we can eat to like be full. So she made lamb and stuff. But so that was cool. But another thing, I had to ask for this lamb. Okay, because it was just originally.
It wasn't part of their regular package.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like, oh, that's actually another $10 per plate. That you need to do, okay? You didn't know about that.
Bro, it was like originally just gonna be like cucumbers and crackers.
Oh my gosh. Things, small circular things to eat. Yeah.
Yes. So that happens. I was like, good. But then, okay, this is another cultural clash that happened. So like, you know, Asian people, like if you ate at my house, okay, we'd have a lot of different things. But if you sat at the dinner table, everything is on the table already, okay?
Oh,
food that we had made is already... So you see what's available, and then you calculate in your head, I'm gonna have a little bit of this, I'm gonna have a potato salad, then I'm gonna have some chicken, you know? But they do a thing where, like, they don't show you the meat, okay? It's like a magic trick. They don't show you the meat.
You just don't know what's about to happen.
And I'm not even sure if the meat was, like, on the invite. Like, I don't... You know what I mean? So, like, I knew about the meat, but I don't know if they knew about the meat. So, like, we were eating the crackers as if this was it.
Yes.
So then when we get done with the dip, she brings that away. She takes it away, then brings the lamb. But I'm already fucking full. I'm already full because we were eating at the speed as if the lamb was not an option. You know? So it was just a lot of miscalculation.
But then
it was
how
good.
Come you ate too much, but you knew there was meat that was gonna
happen. Because we were like chatting and like, I don't know. I didn't know how to deal with the situation because I'm not used to like magic tricks when it comes to food.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So
like,
you were full. You did get full from this
meal. I did. Yes. And
sneaky.
And sneaky.
So sneaky.
So
I'm
sneaky,
sneakily
dude.
Full. Yeah. No, sneaky, but I feel you. Go ahead. Keep going.
So that happened, and I was like trying, and she like, we like talked about this, and like, we like almost got in a fight. I mean, I wasn't trying to be a dick, but I was like just laughing at how like, I just thought it was humorous. I thought the situation was humorous because like, you know, I'm not used to, you don't hide the food from me. Put it on the table. You know, like you go to, you know, you go to an Asian person's house, the food is fucking on the table, or at least I can see it in the kitchen or something, you know? And so that was like another like cultural thing that happened. And, you know, I don't know who to talk about this to because I don't think a lot of my friends are in this situation.
I
unique
feel
situation.
You. I feel
and,
you.
And I can't talk to you about it because I know that you never have this problem.
Well, no, but well, you know what I'm hearing from all this? Okay. Allow me to put on my relationship counselor hat.
Yes,
okay?
Yes, please.
All right. Und tell me about your marriage. No, okay.
You're German for some reason.
Yeah, und tell me a little bit more about your Mazda. No, like, okay, so what I'm seeing here, and I see this all the time, especially with Asian people, is that this is really not about the food. This is about your relationship. Because when you come over to an Asian person's house, all right, they're not just feeding you. They're trying to flex on you as far as like, check out how much motherfucking food we got.
Mm.
We got so much property up in this motherfucker. Okay. Also, there's Hennessy on the wall that we may or may not pull down, but you got it. But because it's your sister. She just got married.
Mm.
She's doing much better than you are in life.
Yes.
You know? She has this nice Brazilian husband who's a doctor, mind you.
He's a doctor.
A doctor. They're coming over. You got to flex on them, okay?
Yes.
I assume that you were probably wearing your traditional kimono at this point.
Yes, you got to.
You
got to flex.
Most formal. You know, Maria is in a tuxedo or whatever it is Bulgarians wear. So I understand. And here's the thing is that like Korean people are especially like this. First of all, Korean food, everything off the table, all the time. They have so much food.
That's what I like about those guys.
What happens is that they don't even clear the food that, like, as more food comes on, they just push the old food out of the way until it falls off. And they're like, damn, some of this food on the ground, though. We don't give a fuck because we just got more food.
That's how much food we have.
We got so much food. We're going to bring more food on.
Yeah.
There's even, man, remember, you know what? There's so much food. We got the grill on the table, motherfucker. Okay, no tricks here. We cook the food right the fuck in front of you.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Tricks. And I do this too when I have friends over is that it's all about, it's not about being full or satisfied. It's about the visual presentation of just having so much of all the different shit, you know. Yeah. I think it's funny because Mediterranean food can be like that because there's like a lot of shit. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you do it right, you got like a lot of shit and you got a fucking lamb that's spinning around and shit and you're like cutting that shit and you're like tossing it on people. I feel this was an interesting thing we should dig into later about your relationship. Because it's about you, your anxiety about like, hey, I gotta make sure my sister and her doctor husband taken care of in this
taken
Japanese,
care of
taken care of. That's what you need to do.
I know,
so
but
that's
instead
really
just,
what's going on.
But instead of taking care of him, we just give him pickles. You know,
I see what you're saying. I feel that sometimes though too. Like I don't know if this is a white people thing, but like for them, it's not always like this. But like sometimes for like nicer meals, there is a little bit of like they're trying to make it like a restaurant where it's like
yes,
oh, we're
they
have
do
this, and everything's very like kind of restrained, right? Like
they change the
time,
plates and shit.
Yeah, you know, like hey, I want the that. Residue from the
exactly
from before,
I want
so I can mix all the rib and mix together.
Yes,
my wife once went to a dinner party, and you know it was like she had first moved to New York. She this is like her friend's friend, right? So like they go to this dinner party. It's like a nice place, Upper East Side, blah blah blah. And she gets the salad. She's like, okay, cool. Salad. You know what? There's probably some other shit. She eats the salad. She doesn't eat too much of the salad, too, because she's like, oh, I don't want to eat, you know, too much of the salad. You know?
She's calculating.
She's eating the salad. That was it. That was all. That was all.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yo.
Yo. Yo, that's a war crime, okay? That's a war crime.
I would not wish that on my worst enemies.
That was
dude.
Crazy.
She
went out to like afterwards. They were having wine, and later on, she went like after she went home. She went and had like a hot dog. That's why you gotta have. That's why there's hot dog stands all over New York City because people are keep like switching it on each other. But you gotta have the hot dog. You know what I'm saying? That'll save you.
The hot dogs are for the people of color who dine with their white friends. Who like, let me just step outside for a second for a smoke, and they just get like chicken over rice.
Yeah, that's why I don't mind when I go out to eat, you know, and I'm like, okay, it's okay. I can just get a hot dog later. It's all good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the whole thing is that food and family and passion, all those things like all mixed together, man. That's what we're here to talk about today, right, Fumi?
That's right. That's right. And I want to get our guest take on this because she's an expert in food.
Yes.
She was on a previous episode. She was on episode 73. Check that out if you haven't already. She's a restaurateur, former chef at Karasu in Brooklyn. She's a chef based in here in New York. She's been featured on Vice Munchies a bunch of times. One of our favorite guests. So amazing. Guys, let's get excited. And please welcome Elina Yamamoto. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Elina, what do you think about the situation that we just described here? Do you understand what we're talking about, you know?
I totally know what you're talking about. It also makes me a little bit nervous to ever have you guys over to me now, because obviously, like, the expectation is so high.
Yeah.
but, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's been a while since I've had a dinner party, like, even without COVID times, just because I'm always at the restaurant. So, like, if I want to impress someone, I'm just like, come to the restaurant, I'll feed you. And, like,
that's right. That's the ultimate flex.
Yeah,
but I saw once really in one of your Vice videos, you guys were all out, and then you guys were clearly hammered, because then you guys started making, like, fried chicken sandwiches with Doritos.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, that's what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? You want to have... You should feel like if you're at a dinner party, oh, this person's trying to kill me. You know, like they're trying to kill me with food, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, I can't believe you're giving me Doritos and chicken sandwiches. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think like I was just with a friend and like his roommate's not in food. And he's also a chef. So his roommate was like recounting this time like that he cooked for his birthday, and he was like, it was just incredible, like the timing of things, and there were like so many dishes that came out, and like their side dishes. And I think what it made me realize is that there's a lot of people that cook at home, they cook like one thing, like the main dish or whatever, like a little bit of side or whatever, they do like one plate. I'm like, that's not how like
the one
like, function. And but then like they're like, everyone is like incredibly impressed if you like have like multiple side dishes.
Multiple side dishes.
And I'm definitely the type of person that like wants the whole spread out and just like dig in family style. That kind
I mean, my wife does like, because you know she's Korean. The Korean people got like 45 dishes all at once. You know.
And I like that.
But now she's gotten me like that too, because like, you know, I'm a bachelor. I'm like one bowl of cereal. That's it.
Oh,
you know,
That's how
that's my dinner. But now I'm like, oh, I can't just have this. I got to have like this other thing, or, you know, like all these different dips and stuff like that too. So yeah, man, I feel that. But thanks. Yeah, go ahead, Fu.
You know, you mentioned the relationship thing earlier, and I think I just thought of this right now. And I don't know why I didn't make this connection, but when I was younger, I would like, we lived in Ohio, and my mom would always be like, what are your American friends eat?
Yes.
And I was like, I don't know. And then she was like, must be bread. And we would all laugh as a family. We'd be like, ha, ha, ha. And then that's what I was doing. So then I was like, oh, my sister's going to tell my mom. And now she's going to roast me.
Oh,
so
my
I think
God.
There was that aspect of it.
They just had bread. Oh, man.
But yes, you know, we decided to have you on the pod today. You know, that's okay. Let's catch up our anals for people who have not listened to the episode or know what's going on. So I want to have you on because you had a very specific thing that happened to you, and I think it's fascinating, just independently, but also considering what we're all going through. We've talked multiple times on the podcast about like how this has influenced a lot of people's lives, their jobs. People are questioning the future of New York. What you know, when is it going to come back? Some people say it's when the vaccine comes out, but I feel like you have a sort of a different angle on everything because you're kind of on the inside. Part of what makes New York amazing is like the restaurant and the bar scene, which you work in. So we just kind of wanted to ask you about that. But to fill our listeners in real quick, last time you came on with your business partner, Yael Peach. Shout out to Yael. You guys were working at Karasu together, which was like a really hip, like Japanese restaurant.
You had just left.
And you were telling us about starting your own project and how exciting you were. And you had just I think at the time you were looking for investors, but then like you and I caught up like not too long ago when you had one of your like pop-up restaurants, which I also talked about in a different episode. You had gotten some people to invest in you guys, and I think Furries was getting like, not Furries, Furries was getting
such a tight restaurant, dude.
Furies.
You never know Furies. What's gonna
Furies.
Happen
never know what's gonna
Furies.
Happen
Furies is tight. Whoa. Too okay, yeah,
what
fair
is
enough
a bowl of rice. I think not. You're getting a skunk dildo up your butt. Nope. So you were getting some buzz because you had some like kind of, we're not gonna mention names, but you had some like famous restaurant people in New York investing in your project, right? So before we kind of get into kind of your, you know, situation, and which I think the listeners will enjoy, as just like if somebody works in the business, you know, like a lot of things are opening up. Me and Mike live in Bed-Stuy, like a lot of things are opening up around us. I was biking by Fort Greene the other day. Everything was open. It seems like restaurants are popping. So from the outside, it seems like they're doing okay. But from your kind of viewpoint, you know, what's your take on like the state of the restaurant industry right now in New York as it stands?
Shit is bleak. I don't know. It's definitely hard. Like, I mean, this is the problem with the food industry in general. Even in good times, there's like a huge disconnect between what the customer is experiencing and what is actually happening in the restaurant. And I think, you know, as like the news was kind of like talking about food service industry and all of that, like early on in the pandemic and like when things were closing, I think there were a lot of people that were shocked to hear that like the margins in restaurants are as small as they are. I mean, like at a restaurant, like you are hoping to get like to make 10%, like,
right.
Which is tiny and ridiculous. And for the most part, like if you were to like start a new industry or like, you know, start a new business, like you don't want to be making 10% profit. Like that's crazy. That's stupid. And, But that's the thing. Like, I mean, a lot of people are more hovering around like the 7% range. And so like, I think there's like, and that's like good times. Right. So there's always been this disconnect. So right now when you're walking around Brooklyn, like there's definitely people outside eating. There's people, you know, walking around getting drinks to go, take out, all that. But I think from just like talking to different friends who are struggling like with their own restaurants and everything, people are barely breaking even. They're keeping the lights on. That's what's happening. Like they're not... No one is thriving, no matter how good it looks. Like, it's really just, they're just trying to scrape by and hold on to the point where they can get beyond this, like, when things, like, actually open up and people start buying things again. And even then, it's going to take so long to get to the point where people are actually making money.
So having said all that, you did the ballsiest thing in the world, and you know, you had been working on your own restaurant idea for a while. You had found a spot, a cute spot in the West Village. You had put some money down. This is like, I don't know, February, March-ish, and then Corona went wild in New York, right? Or in New York and in America and the world. The world was on fire, and you and your business partner like were still gonna go with it. You were still kind of going to proceed with your plans at the moment. Well, can you kind of talk about... Yeah.
What was your, like, thought process about, like, were you sort of like, well, maybe this won't be so bad, or maybe, you know, it was going to be a small shutdown, or just, like, sort of what was the timeline for that?
So we had signed earlier in the fall, our actual lease didn't start until January. So we had found this spot. We were in negotiations. It takes a long time to negotiate everything. And we signed in January. And then we got tripped up on a lot of different kind of building things and permits and legal stuff. So, like, the entire process of opening a restaurant is just long and fraught with many, many different, you know, kind of, like, terrible situations. And then, so when the shutdown happened... like DOB shut down, like Department of Buildings and everything. So there was no construction. So we had to put everything on pause,
right?
Regardless of what, like, it didn't matter. Like, you can't keep building out. Like, it's not like we could just like, it's like, oh, it didn't matter that we didn't have customers. We could keep going. We were forced to stop, which was fine because it was within our first six, like, so our lease, we had negotiated to get 6 months free rent, which is,
whoa,
relatively typical for a restaurant. Like, it depends on the landlord how many months you get, but so we had that 6 month build out period, because that's like, you know, it's to the landlord's benefit for you to not start as deeply in debt, like, based on they want you to succeed so that you can stay there for longer. So
got it.
We were still within that cushion period, so we didn't pay rent, but we had put down a sizable deposit. Plus, like, paying for design and legal and architecture and all that stuff. So, we had already invested quite a bit of money into this project, like, even though it hadn't opened up yet. So I kind of, like, and also, like, my dad invested. So there was family money involved. So I felt very, like, okay, the city's shutting down. Maybe it's only for a little bit. Like, shit was bad in China, but, like, overall, it wasn't, like, an entire year shut down. It was still only a few months. I'm like, well, that's still within our six-month time period, so we might be able to negotiate with our landlord and, you know, stretch things out. So it didn't feel totally insane to keep moving forward. And also, I felt like I had an obligation to make the money back that we had already put into the project. So I was like, you know, stupidly very optimistic. I'm like, okay, well, you know, we just have to move forward with this. Like, this is what we have to do. So then, like, as things were developed, like, every week there's, like, something new happening. Like, a different restaurant is closing, or, you know, like, the cases are so high. And New York was, like, hit really hard, obviously. So it was, I don't know, getting more and more depressing and, like, really worrisome. And we were just like, all right, just focus on branding right now. Like, if we can, like, keep that happening, then right. that's good. Like, we'll stay kind of like relevant in the public eye, even though this project is getting pushed, and hopefully people will still care about what's happening to us. And
right.
Mm-hmm. Like, the hype will be there, so they'll come when we do open. And then phase two happened, and construction was going to be allowed again. And, you know, that was also like in the midst of all the protests happening. And so Yael and I had a lot of discussions about like, okay, what does it mean for restaurants to exist in this new world? How do we address like the real issues within the food industry in terms of like equity and like, I don't know, just everything. Like, there's so many problems within the food industry.
Right.
So we're like, okay, how do we address these? This is like what we want to do. This is how we're going to deal with COVID. If we open and we still have to do 50% capacity, like, are we going to be able to make the money back? Are we going to be able to pay our investors back? So we like came up with a plan, and this was like a Monday or a Tuesday. We were talking with our other partner, and he's like, well, so I set up demolition to start on next Monday. And I was like, I've been like having panic attacks about this for the past year anyway. but then I was like, oh shit, like, Yael, we really need to like touch base with all of our investors and make sure that they still want to be in this.
Right.
Because we had kind of gone silent because there were just too many things moving, and it felt like if we say one thing, then it changes the next week, whatever. So we had been quiet. So we're like, let's just check in and like, not tell them that this is their time to get out if they want to get out, but also kind of like, you know, let's be optimistic, but right. this will at least will open up the conversation for that.
Didn't your like business partner tell you like it might even be a good time to open or something like that?
Yeah. So he was like, in some ways it could be good because if and when we do open, there's going to be less competition.
Yeah.
And less competition.
Everyone's
is
dead.
Good.
Everyone's nice. Dead. People yeah. are dead.
Nailed it.
So,
I'm just picturing him like yeah, pointing at the graph, like, guys, less competition. 1 million cases, less competition.
Less competition.
Anyway, so we sent this email out to all of the
which
investors.
We got, by the way.
Yeah,
we were not investor, but we got it.
Well, I just figured, like, you should know you've cared about what's happening, so, like, I'll just let them know. Like, we're, like, trying to, like, do this, whatever. So we sent this out, and it was, like, trying to be really positive. It was a Friday. And I, like, you know, wrote this thing, whatever, and then within 10 minutes of sending this email, one of our main investors, who happens to be pretty big in the food industry in mm-hmm. the world, not just New York, called us and was like, girls, get out of this deal.
Wow.
Like, do not.
He's
do
just
not
like, bail right
forward.
Now. Got it.
Yeah. He's like, do not spend another penny and get your lawyers on like getting you out of this lease immediately. Like,
wow.
I think he tends to be even more pessimistic than me when I think about things. Like, I'm incredibly frugal, like, maybe to a fault, and, like, am very cautious about kind of, like, what I do and how I pursue things, but, like, he was even more so. And he basically was just, like, saying everything that we knew. Like,
right.
we had a gut feeling about it. And he was just like, New York is not going to bounce back for years. Like, after 9/11, it took 3 to 4 years for tourism to come back. And that was just New York.
Right.
And this is something that affects the entire world. So he's just like,
right.
this, like, if you had already started construction on the kitchen, then like, I'd say, don't touch the dining room. Don't spend any money on that. Just like push forward with a to-go plan, whatever. And try and build up that way, which will be hard because we don't have an established brand and
established
loyalty. But we hadn't started any demolition yet. So he's like, this is like, unfortunately, it's not a reflection of you and your talent or the strength of the idea. It's really just like the worst timing in the entire world.
Yeah.
What was that like getting that phone call? So immediately, basically after that email, especially from this person's, you know, specifically.
Yeah, it was devastating. When people say they felt crushed, like, it really was, like, mm-hmm. I felt truly crushed, like, physically, emotionally, mentally, everything. And he was just like, I'm so sorry to call you and tell you this. But also, I so appreciate that he's running multiple restaurants and having to make terrible decisions about so many different things. And so he's just, I super appreciated that he took the time to call us. And that also made me take what he was saying even more seriously.
Right.
Like, you know, that he's like, in like really investing in like making sure that we get immediate feedback and good advice.
Yeah.
And so we kind of just like sat with that for the day. And then I called my dad that night and
yep.
The reporter
called the dad. Gotta call the dad.
Yeah. And was just like, let me lay out what, you know, this person said, and kind of what Yael and I are thinking. And I was like really kind of leaving it up to him to push us in either direction. Like I was thinking that we should like pull out, but it was also his money. So I was going to like say at that point it was just his money. So, I was going to say like, you know, if you really want us to do this, we will do this. Cause like, I feel a huge amount of responsibility, like that you trusted me and believed in my idea and put your own money into this. Which was huge because my parents are also extremely frugal and like, but he was just like, Alina, like if a typhoon is coming, the ships don't leave the port.
Right, like, right. Mm-hmm.
This is 100% absolutely a huge typhoon. Like,
wow. What a poetic way to say that. Yeah.
The next day, we sent out a really sad email. It's just like,
yeah.
Yeah, but that email was like, that email was like a sentence long.
Right.
Yeah, it was so short. I was just
did you like lose the money, all that money that he had invested? Was just like you just had to kind of take it or whatever, just this is gone?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Dude, we always talk,
that's like college, man, you know? What a holy crap.
It is. And I said that, I was like, well, it's kind of, I'm like, I'm sorry you paid for like another round of college. And he's like, right. Actually, it's a little bit more expensive than college. We still had more fundraising to do. Like, we hadn't reached our goal yet. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, you know, some of these, like, really big, pretty wealthy investors pulled out because it felt like they were throwing away money. I was like, if they can't give us money, possible way that we're going to get more. So we were going to have to, like, cut our budget by a ton or just... I don't know.
When you got that call from the main investor who you took his advice, you know, it sounded like you were kind of on his side. Was there like, did your business partners, was there a point where they're like, nah, I think we should keep going? Like, was there any of that, or was everybody kind of in agreement? It's okay that if there was some disagreement, because I, you know, if you pour your life and soul and money into this thing for 1 or 2 years, like I could see you being, I guess anyone being sort of myopic about the situation, you know, like you poured so many hours into this. Like, how can you just stop? You know, like who are you after that? You know what I mean? Like,
was there any of that? Huge identity crisis afterwards. I think we were all nervous about moving forward. And I think there was a little, cause there's three of us involved in this. And I think we were all kind of being fake optimistic with each other because we thought we needed to do it for the other person because we didn't have anything else lined up, you know? So it's like, okay, well, like, let's just like keep going. We can keep pushing. Like, I know Yael felt that responsibility because it was like my family that's going to bear the brunt of this. And then our other partner, he has other restaurant projects and everything, but he was really excited about this one too. And he was like, well, we already spent so much money. And also this is like, what are you girls going to do after?
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah.
And so I think we were just all putting on a brave face.
Right.
So it's, I don't know. It's good that our hand was kind of forced, I think, to, like, we had to have that conversation.
So after you send this email, it, you know, you get out of the your various contracts, you're sitting there. At what point did you decide, okay, time to go back to grad school? Was there anything like that? Was there anything where you're like, okay, let's do this, all right? Paralegal, you know? Like, did you have a crisis like that? Or was it like, okay, I just got to, you know, kind of pick up the pieces and move on?
Yeah, I mean, I have gone through many, many emotions since this has all happened. I can't believe that this was just June. It feels like a lifetime ago at this point.
Right, right, yeah.
But, like, yeah, I mean, especially, like, there's so much, like, depressing shit happening in the food industry. Like, there's so many, like, really big disappointing things that are happening also within, like, you know, like, I don't know, people saying bullshit and, like, getting canceled and all this other, like, there's just, like, like, there's so much angst within the food industry in addition to the fact
for sure.
that so many people are out of work and so many people are just barely getting by and, like, really, like, unhappily struggling through. I had many conversations with Yael, other people, like, just, like, is this even something that I want to still do? Like,
right,
is
right.
this something that, like...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, which is crazy because I've devoted so much of my adult life to this, and, like, you know, even I don't know, Yael and I have talked to, like, well, you know, the design stuff doesn't go away. Like, we spent a shit ton of money on that, but it could be applied to this project, even if we have a different space in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years or something. But then right. I'm just like, do I really want to open a restaurant,
right.
go through all of that when I'm pushing 40? I don't know that I want
right.
to do that. I don't know
right,
that
right,
I
right,
like
right.
have that kind of energy. Like, I know people do it, but it's exhausting. Like, it's one thing to do it at 33, but, like, it's another thing to do it later. I'm like,
yeah.
is that what I really want? Like, I don't always think in, like, I mean, I try and think long term, but, like, I'm not the type to make, like, a 5-year plan, you know?
Having
that kind of, like, looming over me, it just felt like really, I don't know. Just, like, do I want to do this? Do I want to be in the public eye? Do I want to, like, open myself up to that kind of criticism? Am I contributing anything good? Are restaurants even worth doing anymore? Like,
right.
One of the things that you said to me when we chatted a little bit earlier that, like, really crushed me is you were saying, like, you know, how your parents were, like, confused about you to begin with because you wanted to be in the restaurant business. And you were, like, you were so close to getting their approval, or, like, maybe you had just gotten it. You know, they were just starting to come around and be like, oh, you know, she actually does know what she's doing, and, you know, she's on these TV shows. And then this happens, and then it's almost like all that confidence. You know, it's kind of like they're not going to say it to you, but you know they're like, told you so, kind of vibes, you know? And, like, that must be so, like, soul-crushing. I can't even imagine what that is like, you know?
I mean, they've been really supportive about it because I think they do see that working in hospitality has been very character-building for me in a lot of ways. Like my dad recently said, like, you know, I think it's really impressive how you can, like, handle people that you don't necessarily, like, get along with, but, like, can, like, you know, if I like have issues, like, with interpersonal relationship, I just go into, like, restaurant mode essentially. And I'm like, okay, well, you're just a customer that I need to figure out how to work with, you know?
Well, I mean, just like dealing with, like, all the different types of people just to get something done in New York, I feel, you know, like I get nervous if I ask to have a plumber come over and you're like talking to like designers and builders and lawyers and all that shit, you know. It's got to be like, you know, you I mean, chefs I already feel are tough as nails, and now it's like, now you're also like, you have an MBA also, you know, because, like, you were trying to make
it really
a,
was like,
you know,
it really was a crash course. And, like, my dad made a good point. He was just like, I don't think you would have learned as much as you did learn had you not pursued it with money on the line, had it not been something that was,
there's
like
really real,
like,
right,
instead of just like a practice in theory kind of thing.
Yes,
which is true. But yeah, I mean, they're everyone knows it's like, this wasn't my fault. We tried so hard. We did all of the things that we were supposed to do. We like partnered with really good people. We had like press was on our side for the most part. And like, it felt like things were going well. And the fact that the world fell apart, I have to remind myself it's not, that's so beyond my control. And my parents like understand that too. They're just, you know, like, all right, that happened. That's okay. Yeah. You're going to be okay. So
it's not too late to become a comedian. Okay. Come on over. It's nice to
come
see
on
you.
Over.
We barely lose money. Barely. Okay. Very steady amount of money we lose.
Net zero.
Yeah.
To kind of expand it out back to the city. I mean, you know, is it like, what does New York City or I guess America, I don't know whatever, but especially New York, 'cause like, you know, the restaurant bar going out culture is so big here and was so it's so much about what the city is about. I mean, what does New York look like if there's no, you know, there's no chefs, there's no cooks, there's no waiters, there's no bartenders, you know what I'm saying? Like, what do you do, right? Like, what do you think's gonna happen to the future of New York?
New York just doesn't feel like New York anymore, or it's not like all of the things that we loved about it are kind of gone. And like, even with outdoor dining, like, you can go out, you can do that, but like, the weather sucks in New York.
The weather sucks.
Is not set up.
There's,
it
sucks. I mean, whenever I would eat out before before the pandemic, there would be tables outside, and I would always be like, why would anyone want to sit outside in New York? There is a pile of trash this high, and there's a bum pissing in it. And then, like, a rat is fighting him. And I'm just like, what? You know what I'm saying? Like, this isn't Paris. This isn't Vienna. You know?
Yeah.
Like, when you go to Paris, you're like, oh, it's beautiful. There's the Seine. You know, there's beauty. You know, there's beautiful French people. You know, there's a guy with an accordion. No, there's a guy here with an accordion masturbating. Okay? That's New York City.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It doesn't make sense. And then, like, what, like, we've had thunderstorm. We had that week of, what was it, hail every day?
Oh, my God. It's great out here. It's totally great. Oh, man. How's your baklava? Oh, my God.
Just, like, total, it's just trash. It's total trash. And, like, and then also the winter sucks. What's going to happen then? I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen in New York. I don't think I've heard anyone with any really good ideas either.
Right.
And I think it's really hard. It's hard for restaurant owners to come up with those ideas, because right now they are just furiously.
We're just trying to survive.
You know?
Right.
Like, and I think, like, when I see a lot of, like, criticism on social media, like, when as I'm, like, doom scrolling, like, everyone's just like, oh, you know, chefs need to, like, talk, like, write more about this, and they need to address this issue, and they need to come up with this. And I'm just like, dude, back off. Like, it's just so not fair to put all of the responsibility on these small business owners. It's like, yeah, there's definitely chains that have, like, time to do that. But for the most part, my friends who are, like, trying to make it work, like, They can hardly make it work. They're not bringing in an income for themselves. Like, they're trying to make it work for their staff, and like, to come up with an entirely new system when the industry itself is not prepared to accommodate that. Like, even people talking about, like, getting rid of tipping, like, that's so complicated, and it's so much more than just an individual restaurant decision. Like, that's like a very, it has to be like a whole industry change all at once. And like, that takes organization, and that takes conversation. And you know what? That takes time, which people don't have when they're just trying to make ends meet.
Lot of your friends, are you seeing a lot of your friends like get out of the game? And you know, I you guys are kind of like breaking up the band a little bit. Like, you know, Yael is going one place and you're going another place. We're about to lose you. New York City's about to lose you. You're going to move to San Francisco. You know, I mean, are a lot of your friends like becoming fucking investment bankers? I have no idea. Like, what?
That's not it.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the move?
I mean, I don't know. I think. There's definitely been a lot of people that have left the city who are like going to the suburbs or different places or whatever. It's like, you know, I didn't seek out San Francisco. I right. happened to get a job there. So right. that's why I'm moving there. And honestly, I just have to go where the work is at this point because there just aren't options.
That's crazy.
So, and like same with Yael and her move out to Washington State. So it's like, I don't know what's gonna, it's what's crazy though is that like, so I studied art, right? Like that's what I had wanted to do. I right. wanted to work in museums. I want to do that. And then
disaster,
you know, screw this. Like I didn't like that, whatever. And I was like, I'm going to get into food. You know where I'm always going to be able to get a job? Food. Food right. is like reliable. Right. Everyone eats. Like,
food is reliable.
Around the world. Well,
I mean, that's the thing is that like to a large extent, you were right. You are right. Everybody has to keep eating. And but like even like, I think we talked about this before. We knew it was bad when other doctors were also not working. Do you know? Like, what I'm saying? Like, unless you were like a straight up ER doctor, you know, who was getting crushed. If you were like anything else, like nobody was going to the podiatrist. You know what I'm saying? Can you imagine going to medical school and having a MD and having a practice and going, oh, mom, dad, I'm going to have to move back in. You know, the podiatry, not working out. I guess I have to go back into food. I want to kind of wrap up. I want to wrap the discussion is, you know, a lot of our listeners, they've got dreams they want to follow. We're following our dreams. I don't know what that means. But, you know, you went through this. It you know, it's just like you said. It's not just that you sort of didn't get to accomplish your goal, but you also, like, you know, you took a hit. Like, your family took a hit, like, real hit. You know, what would you say, you know, you learned from this such that you could advise someone who's thinking about doing something like this? Do you feel it was worth it? You know, would you do it again? You know what I'm saying?
Oh man, those are big questions. Would I do it again? I think I probably would do it again. I did learn a lot. Wish in some ways I wish we hadn't gone as far as we had gone. Like I wish like things had happened earlier. But, you know, whatever, you can't help that. But I do think that it was worth doing. And because I went through that entire process, I was able to get this other gig that happened.
Right.
Like, right. And, like, you know, all of the things that I learned, like the fact that I am able to understand kind of the business end of it, which I didn't totally understand before, that made me more attractive for this new position. So it's like,
that's cool.
You know, I do think, like, it was good, and failure is good to experience sometimes. Like, it hurts. Mm. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's totally, like, it shakes up your entire, like, sense of self, especially in this kind of capitalist world that we live in. Like, it sucks, but I also think that learning how to be resilient and also patient is a good thing. So, I mean, hopefully I'm not wrong. Who knows? I haven't started this new job yet. So.
sounds like you're still in denial. Okay, thank you very much for having me. I think that's important. We're always going to be fans of you, and we're excited. And we, you know, hey man, we eventually, I assume. Oh my God, if people don't go out to eat, why would they go out to listen to jokes? That's what I'm thinking about now.
Dude, that's when
there's
she
no
said
way.
When she was like, "Well, you know, I learned the skill and it helped me get this other job." I cannot imagine us putting any of this on a resume. If you put this podcast on your resume, you will not get the next job for sure.
There's so many, dude. This is kind of an aside, but I do not update my LinkedIn. Because I kind of don't want people to be able to easily find me out. To link my comedy self with my other normal self. You know what I'm saying? Because there's like a bunch of Mike Nguyen. So maybe if I'm applying for a job, they go, oh man, okay, we're going to hire this guy. It's a good thing you're not like this other Mike Nguyen comedian guy.
Totally.
That guy's a douche. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be funny if he spells your name at work like Mike, like it's a different Mike.
Yeah,
you know?
I should change it.
Switch it.
I'm actually John. John Tran.
John,
that's my name.
John Tran.
Oh man. Oh, what, hey, Fumi, what's that sound you're doing over there,
Fumi? nothing. Definitely just eating cereal. Nothing else. Nothing else happening here.
Nothing weird. No, I've heard that sound when Japanese people make it, and trust me, it is not usually eating cereal. But it does look like you're eating cereal. What kind? That looks good as hell. What is that?
It's funny you ask. It's actually Magic Spoon.
Oh man, I've heard about Magic Spoon. It's really it's pretty crazy. It's zero sugar, 11 grams of protein, and only 3 net carbs in each serving.
It's got 4 flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, blueberry. Blueberry is my favorite.
Oh man, I'm a big fan of Frosted myself. It tastes amazing. Honestly, too good to be true.
It's keto friendly, gluten friendly, grain free, soy free, low carbs, GMO free. This sounds like that Kanye West workout song. You know what I'm talking about?
So go to magicspoon.com/Asian to grab a variety pack and try it today. Be sure to use our promo code Asian at checkout to get free shipping.
And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
That's magicspoon.com/Asian and use the code Asian for free shipping.
We thank Magic Spoon for sponsoring the podcast. Now back to this.
Das Race News today is really pertinent to what's going on because we've been kind of following this story. It's about Bon Appetit, and it's kind of crazy because this article kind of reminded me that at the beginning of the pandemic, I was watching so much Bon Appetit stuff. I was constantly watching it. All the different kinds of things. I went and watched some of their old stuff too, and now like they're nowhere. For people who don't kind of remember, the Bon Appetit leadership got called out, right? He got removed, under the allegations that the people of color chefs were not being paid as equitably, they weren't being paid as well as the white chefs who were appearing and doing the YouTube videos. So there's this whole thing, and you know, Bon Appetit has kind of gone dark for a little bit while all these negotiations are happening. But now there's been an update, and it doesn't look good. Okay, and I'll read the headline here. It says 5 Bon Appetit stars have exited the test kitchen. The test kitchen is sort of like that video space they have, and that's really where like kind of like the foundation of the whole like operation is. So I'll read it here. In simultaneous statements released on Twitter and Instagram on Thursday, Priya Krishna, Sole Alwale, and Rick Martinez announced they've left the publication's enormously popular video series. The decision comes after negotiations with Condé Nast Entertainment for more equitable pay, which the company's video leadership promised, but which Krishna says was just quote-unquote lip service. So I believe they're still working for the magazine, Condé Nast magazine, which is like a separate thing. And recently, actually, Bon Appetit magazine just hired a woman of color to sort of lead that. So maybe that's going to be dope. But I mean, you know, they're not going to be on Test Kitchen. That was the big thing. This was a huge, huge like a platform, right? And millions of views for each thing. I don't know. They like tweeted about it, and they basically couldn't come to an agreement about how much they were going to be featured on the show, in the videos, and also like they couldn't get to agreement about how much they were going to get paid. You know, it's kind of crazy. I don't know. I mean,
Alina, had you heard about that? Like, have you been keeping up with this? Do you have friends who are in that circle?
I don't have anyone in that circle. I have been paying attention. What a mess. Like, it's like such a mess.
Well, you've done stuff for all kinds of, you know, media brands out there cooking food and shit. Like, I don't know if you've experienced that yourself or...
I mean, I when I heard the amount of money that they were getting and were upset about getting, I was just like, fuck you guys, I hardly get paid at all. But then I'm like, oh God, have I been taken advantage of? And I just didn't realize. I just assumed that that was like the going rate.
Right.
I don't know, because I'm not in media. Media is not my thing. I do restaurants, and that's kind of like that's been my focus. So really anything that I got paid for outside of the restaurant felt good.
I feel like they bring this up. Bo and Yang had a very good tweet reply to it. So I think Priya Krishna had tweeted this thing. She posted three screenshots of her note app and explained the whole thing. And they're saying, like, you know, chefs or... I was going to say chefs of color, COCs, cocks, you know, they're often carelessly framed as experts of their communities. That's something that you and I experienced one time when we did a YouTube thing, you know, it's like, oh, you're Japanese. You must know the history of ramen. It's like, no, I don't know anything, you know?
And we
don't have the privilege to walk away, right? Like a lot of comedians, you know, if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, Lena, do you want to do a thing for Complex Media? You'd be like, yeah. And they'd be like, we're going to pay you $50. You're not really in the position to walk away because you want the, you know, this is back then when you're still doing the restaurant, but you want the exposure, right? They're going to pay you an exposure. And Bo and Yang responded and was like, you know, this fucking sucks. I'm so sorry, Priya. I can't wait to see you thrive in an environment that values you. And I think about that a lot because I think for a lot of, I don't know if it's an Asian thing or a POC thing, but we don't necessarily value ourselves because.
Oh, yeah,
I think,
for sure we don't.
I think it's related to the fact that, like, we're not really on TV or like you don't see a lot of like Asian leaders. I mean, maybe in food there's a few, but in comedy certainly not. I mean, I was just thinking about this isn't that long ago when there was a book called The Flash Boys or something that was really popular. It's like a New York Best Time seller, and it's about this guy who works on Wall Street, and they were gonna make a movie adaptation with Aaron Sorkin, and Aaron Sorkin was like, I can't have an Asian lead because there are no Asian stars, or the Asian leads don't make money. The Asian leads don't make money is what he said specifically, and things like that kind of trickle down. And it, as an Asian comedian, sometimes I think like, well, maybe they're not going to put me on because if I do it, people aren't going to show up and not make money. I believe that for a long time. I still kind of believe that.
Therefore, like we're a liability then rather than an asset.
I mean, you and I are like going through this contract right now, and it's almost like every time we have to remind each other, like, no, we're good. You know what I mean? Like, we're constantly shitting on each other. We're like, we just talk about bust ups. We're going to quit, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But it's like, I wish that I didn't have to say that to make myself feel better. I wish that I could just be like, nah, this is a good podcast. But like, I have such a hard time saying that.
It's such a weird thing because, you know, to your point, Alina, like people, you don't know about this space necessarily, which is totally understandable, right? And hey, these people, Priya and the other people of color, the chefs of color, they, you know, may not have known either. Hey, you know, they're food people, they're food experts and stuff like that. But, you know, hey, the white chefs were getting paid. So you couldn't, so the argument that like, oh, well, maybe because, you know, you're not that famous, you shouldn't get some money. That doesn't really work because these other, I had never heard of any of these other chefs before either.
Yeah.
And they were getting the cash. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, I don't know all the stuff about the contracts and stuff like that, but like, I feel like it's pretty straightforward. Pay them as much as you pay these other people.
Like, I think
I don't know why, I don't know where, I don't know what rubric they're using where they can't do that.
It's the white variable.
I think the issue that, I mean, it really is like a systemic issue, right? Because like the people that got famous first. So even if you're talking about it in terms of seniority, the people that were allowed to be in those videos first were white people. So they automatically have seniority, which like the people of color didn't even have that opportunity. So there's not going to be like even saying it's based on seniority, you're not accounting for the fact that like there was a barrier there.
Right.
So, like, that's an issue. Also, transparency is an issue. This whole idea of not talking about how much you're paid really just, like, hurts your ability to negotiate. Like, because who tells you how to... Like, no one teaches you how to negotiate. That's something you have to learn either through mentors or just through it happening and all of that. Like, I, at one point, while I was still living in Japan, I was talking to a friend of mine there and was feeling really upset about this one kind of job that I was doing. I was like, I'm just working so many hours and I have no support and I'm not getting paid and like the way that I feel like I should, but I don't really know what's appropriate. And he's just like, just because you love what you do does not mean that you don't deserve to get paid for it. So like, and I think like people take advantage of your passion. So
100%. Yes.
Like, they're like, well, you love it, and this is interesting, and this is good for you, so I'm not, like, you're getting some sort of fulfillment out of it beyond monetary, so we don't have
right.
to take care of like so
right right
that's like and I think that's part of what happens in food, like definitely in like the test kitchen and stuff. They're like, well, you know, you're getting all these followers, you're getting all this like exposure, you love working in the kitchen, you like being on camera, so like why aren't you okay with this? But it's like,
yeah
I don't know, it's just a little more complicated than that. Also I mean, I'm sure like the job, I think the issue is that they weren't hired for that job to begin with.
Yes.
They were hired to be working in the kitchen, and then suddenly they're being wrapped into these videos, and there was no like real moment of like, okay, now we're adding this to your responsibilities.
Right, to your responsibilities.
This is what we're compensating you for in addition to what you're actually doing, instead of it just getting rolled up and then like becoming this kind of thing. I don't know.
And you kind of bring up a great point too about, you know, when for me as a consumer, when I was watching these videos, yeah, you know, hey, I liked all the different people on there, but what made it also good was all the different people who were on there, all the diversity, all the different kinds of perspectives you were getting. So you could make the argument that the reason why this was successful in the first place was it wasn't just certain kinds of people being shown on the YouTube. It was on the YouTube videos. It was all these different kind of perspectives. So they're entitled to some of that equity because they helped make it successful. Whereas I think a lot of times people think, oh well, these videos are successful and because you know we did all the work and you know you kind of were just in the background just hanging out.
Yeah.
And that, you know, like that gray area, I think people can take advantage of you. You know what I'm saying? To your point,
yeah.
Like, you know, because you love doing it or you're so lucky that you're sitting in the background. You know what I'm saying? And that's such a good point, too, about because you love something, you know, people think they shouldn't get paid for it. And you know, hey, I don't like comedy. But I should definitely get paid for it because it sucks. So, it's crazy. And it kind of sucks. I mean, it really sucks because in the end, Priya and Sola and Rick Martinez and these people, yes, they're still going to be working in the magazine, but they're not going to be in the video. That's what this comes down to is they got cut from this channel.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And this channel is, you know, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, no, Condé Nast really screwed this one up. Like, honestly, like, I was talking to my brother about it last night, and he's like, this could have been their reboot. This could have been, like, Degrassi,
something.
You know, season two or whatever. Like, you know, like, just, like, bring in new characters, like, do the whole thing. Like, it's a new story.
Bring in new characters. It's true.
I mean, like, that's, you know, I mean, that's essentially what they're being forced to do now. Like they could have made the decision to do it in a nice, smart, good way. But instead they're just like, they screwed it up.
Yeah, it seems like they just didn't. Calling out someone or something is like phase one, but people really want to see phase two, which is like your actions, you know? And like typically, I mean, you would think a corporation would be like, okay, we screwed the pooch on that one. Let's do a whole new program. And then they're still like, no, we're going to pay you $30,000 like that.
Yeah.
These numbers are so insult. I just can't understand like what.
Yeah.
Also when it comes to food, I don't know why people of color get mistreated because like, I don't know what kind of food channel America would have if you just took away all the food that come from different countries. Like,
have bread. You'd have bread, Fumi.
And then my mom laughing in the background.
Bread.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Bon Appetit. That's today we're going to have bread.
Bread. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your story. It was super inspiring. And, you know, I think a lot of people are feeling that way. You know, I got to be honest. I there was a point. I've never seriously considered quitting comedy until the coronavirus happened. Then I seriously considered it. And it was really weird.
You thought about moving. You were. I'm telling you, Fumi, if you had moved, I saved your fucking career, okay? If you had fucking moved, there's no fucking way you would be able... Like, there's no fucking... Okay, you were like, oh, am I moving, you know, to where the fuck? Ohio or wherever. I'm like, there's no fucking way. There's no comedy.
You saved my career.
I fucking saved your ass, dog, okay? You're about... Oh, I want to get a dog. It's either a dog or a comedy, okay? One of the two. You can't have both. No comedians have dogs.
Yes. Oh, you'll be getting commission. Don't worry.
I'll be getting commission. Yeah. Thank you, Alina, for coming on the show and talking about all this stuff and your experiences. We wish you good luck, and I'm sure we'll have you on again at some point. Where can our fans find you?
You can find me on Instagram at ELECHAN, and that's where you'll hear all of my updates.
And if you're on the West Coast, be sure to keep tabs on her and check out her new the place she'll be working, which we cannot say yet. But
we can't talk about that yet.
Not yet.
Okay,
no problem.
No problem.
Can we say San Francisco though, or no?
San Francisco, yes. I will be in San Francisco, and there's something really fun in the works, and when we're ready, I'll definitely post it on Instagram. So.
Please support her financially. She owes her dad a lot of money.
Okay,
that's what this is about.
This is what this is about.
Honestly,
plug your Venmo.
Do it. You never know, man.
Oh my gosh. As always, you can find us on the social media. We're on there at Asian Not Asian Pod. Please give us a follow. I'm also on all platforms at The Fumi Abe. That's THEFUMIABE.
Hey, you can find me on Instagram at Nice Pants Bro.
Please, please, please come to our Hack City stand-up show on Zoom every Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Just go to AsianNotAsianPod.com for tickets. They are free, and we do it every week, different comedians every time. Find us on Patreon, patreon.com/AsianNotAsianPod for bonus content. We have one bonus episode per month, so if you join now, there's like 14 new episodes you can listen to of just us keeping it raw. I think that's our show. Thank you so much, Alina. Again, this was so much fun, and we wish you the best of luck. And Anals, we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, we're gonna do our Patreon shout outs. If you don't know what we're talking about, join us at patreon.com/AsianNotAsianPod for bonus content. And if you join, you also get a shout out on the podcast. If you give us a certain money, we slide into your DMs. It's a real good time. We have a lot of people that's part of our army, so please check that out. Okay, our newest Patreon.
For sure.
People for this month. Let me pull them up. Here we go. We're gonna try to guess your ethnicity based on your last name. Here we go. John Hogan. This is my friend. This is my friend John Hogan from Google.
Hogan.
He drives an Audi. He's rich as fuck. He works at Google. He is.
I can tell that he. Yeah. I can tell that he is your friend because he sounds Midwestern as a motherfucker.
No, he's actually.
Is that true?
No, he's from Hawaii. And he's half Asian. He actually looks very Asian.
Is he the guy? A guy I met once.
You might have met him. He's
Did
half.
I meet him?
He's half Thai, half Irish. And he said people get confused when he goes to job interviews.
I was confused, but people also get confused during Patreon shoutouts. So
that's true. That's true.
Good for you.
Good for me. Okay, thank you, John. Thank you. You probably should have given more. So that's that. next, we have Bella Tsay, T-S-A-Y.
T-S-A-Y. Taiwanese.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Why not?
Taiwanese. Melissa Young, but spelled Y-O-U-N-G. I think this person is Swedish.
Y-O-U-N-G. I'm going to say
Young is a Swedish last name.
Yes. Also, Mormon. You know,
not even a race.
Mormon.
We know your religion. Now we're doing religion.
Not even a race.
Let's also do religion.
We're doing.
Okay.
Let's also do that. Yeah.
Next, we got Kristen Choi, Korean and Choi? Christian,
and a Presbyterian.
Is that
okay?
Is that a thing?
That's the one.
Ooh.
That, it is now Korean Presbyterian Church. You know, where's that big van? The big Korean van that you know what I'm saying that they use to. Go to Bible study. You know what I'm talking about.
Okay, next we have Cassandra Nguyen.
Cassandra Nguyen, Vietnamese, and as all Vietnamese are, we're Catholic. But we're also animists, you know?
What's an animist?
You know, we believe in like spirits and shit.
Oh,
you know what I'm
that's fun. That's more fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a heretical Catholic, you know, because we still we worship Jesus, but also grandma.
That's a very Vietnamese thing. You have like you have your main religion, bitch, but you got your side hoe, your side religious hoe.
We got the side one. We got the side,
which
one.
Is just like
we're
the sun.
Like, hey.
Yeah,
yeah. We just throw in a little Buddhism in there too. You know what I'm saying? We just send them some DMs.
Yeah, why not? Okay, we got two more. This person's name is just Danny. D-A-N-N-Y.
D-A-N-N-Y. First of all, gonna say it, Chinese for sure.
Chinese.
That's a Danny move.
That is a Danny move.
And This person, you know what? Agnostic.
Agnostic. Mm. Only focused on his where it all plays salary. Out. Yes. Yeah. Finally, we have, I don't know how to pronounce this. Irie. And then the last name is Monte.
Irie Monte. How do you spell the last name?
M-O-N-T-E. Yeah.
M-O-N-T-E. Huh. I'm going to say...
It's like Central European. Filipino. Filipino? Oh, yeah. Okay. Really? Yeah, yeah,
gonna,
yeah.
I'm gonna go Filipino. I'm going to go Filipino. Catholic, of course.
Yes, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
But ultimately, still worships Pacquiao. So there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, there you go. That's your religion.
That's the one. That's the God right there.
Well, hope you enjoyed the shout-out, everybody. Thank you so much for your contribution. If you're not part of the Patreon family, please check out patreon.com/Asian, not Asian Pod.